you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
You got the right place at the exact right time. This is Sixers Talk brought to you by Wilmington University, Wilmu Works, Danny Pomdels, Paul Hudrick, the level-headed one, our esteemed co-host and producer, Ben Berry. We're here again, joining us to have some Sixers discussion where they once again, in my estimation, outclassed another one of these teams in the NBA bubble because they are looking like they have spacing, flow, Ben Simmons moving to the four. It all feels good right now. I wish Joel Embiid was out there to actually experience some of the euphoria with them on the second scrimmage as they lost to the Oklahoma City Thunder. That means nothing to me because it's what happened when the starters were on the floor and I saw Ben having people in a straitjacket and I just saw a lot of – I mean, as much as I hounded Al Horford for his shooting and previous tweets and social media exposure, he was – what, 4 or 5 from three?
4 or 5, yeah.
His first one.
They just look really good. To me, what stands out is defensively, I think they've been ridiculous. Led by Ben. I mean, Ben Simmons has to be a candidate for Defensive Player of the Year. And, yeah, it's two scrimmages, but if you watch these scrimmages closely, you see all the reasons why. He's disruptive. He gets in a passing lane, gets his hands on balls. He guards everybody. There is not a position that he cannot guard on the NBA level. And that's – how many guys can you say that about? I mean, Draymond Green, to an extent, Anthony Davis. Like, there's just not a lot of guys you can say can guard 1 through 5 seamlessly. And he is one of them. And, you see Matisse and how active he's been in passing lanes. And Josh Richardson has been sneaky, really good, especially, again, defensively. And that's what stood out to me the most, that they are looking to – they're looking to turn teams over and they're looking to jailbreak on the other end. And that's a pretty damn good recipe. And then when you have to slow things down, as you talked about, Danny, Ben Simmons moving to that four, playing in the elbow where he can kind of – you know, he gets a little bit more freedom because you can't sag off him, so you have to come up and play him. Plus there's that two-man game he's developing with Shake Milton. I mean, there is a lot to like right now. As you said, any – sane, smart person will not care about the result of them losing a game because it does not matter. They were up by 24 when the starters were preparing to leave the floor. So I am just really impressed through two games. And like you said,
after being up 29 against Memphis.
Right. Yeah. So I think they are at a good place as far as focus, as far as intensity. And yeah, you just want to see that keep going and see Joel Embiid in that mix. Hopefully he's back tomorrow or back Tuesday night for the last scrimmage against the Mavs. If not, let's really hope he's back for the season opener on Saturday. They might want to give him that extra time off. We're still not sure about his status yet, but he was expected to practice today. But, yeah, I mean, to me, so far so good through two scrimmages.
Ben Simmons looks like the scariest player on the planet right now. The way he shut down Ja Morant the other day, I think Morant was 0 for 5 with 3 turnovers. Like Paul said, he can guard 1 through 5. The only thing I would like to see Ben do is cut down on the amount of turnovers. He had 5 the other night against the Thunder, but he's nearly unstoppable. And as Al Horford said, anyone looking to stop Ben Simmons, good luck. And that's all it is. Good luck. He is Brian Mills in a Taken movie. He's a man on a mission, and no one's getting in the way. Like, it just looks dangerous. It looks scary. Like, there's nothing you can do.
It's just like a different vibe, right? Like, he doesn't even look like as great as we've known him to be at times. You know, 2-time All-Star, very good player. It is just different. There is just something different about him. And, again, you don't want to put too much stock into scrimmages, but, damn, Danny, like, it just feels different from him. he feels like he has elevated his game to another level.
I was going to say it's funny because I kind of screwed up because we talked about before we started the podcast about starting with Joel, and here we are. I mentioned Ben, and like everybody just like goes off on the tangent. It's just you look at the dude, and I don't even have a problem that he didn't shoot a three in the second game to kind of follow up with the momentum from the first, because I don't know. I mean, I just have studied this dude and looked at him, and I feel like he didn't shoot a three in this last game because it just didn't come in the flow of the game. It wasn't any need to do it. So I just feel like he's out there trying to do and play and make the best plays for the team, regardless of what it may be. And he says those things and then goes out there and backs him up. So it just makes it believable. And you see him setting these screens. And like you said, operating in that paint and 15-foot area. And he's just so free because he doesn't have to have the conscious responsibility of bringing the ball up all the time. So it just frees him up to do so many other things. And I forget the Twitter person on Twitter who commented to me to say that him and Shaq just click, man. It's just a little bit of, I don't know, the rhythm, the flow. You know, Ben can be a guy who floats around and then kind of like finds his way in the game and kind of just, you know, lets the game come to him, where Shaq can do the same thing. And the two of them together are just like making it, okay, this screen and roll, it looks like there's a little wiggle room. I'm going to take it to the basket. Oh, this time, maybe it's not. I'm going to pass it to Ben for the alley-oop or whatever it may be. It just seems to be a rhythm and flow with them. And you see the choreographed celebrations on the free throws. That stuff means something, man. Everybody of like minds and everybody on the inside joke and whatnot. I just like to see everything that's transpired so far.
Did you see Ben's response when he was asked about the celebration?
What'd he say?
He acted like he had no idea what the reporter was talking about. And then she followed up and he's like, oh no, I think we're just in sync. And he said it like deadpan as hell. It was actually really funny. And then Shake said, I have no idea where it came from. They just told me to start doing it, so I did it. There is something there, Danny, and Noah Levick wrote a really great article today just kind of talking about the contrast between Ben and Shake and why that's part of the reason why it works. Brett Brown said, if it's a missed basket, I want Ben Simmons to grab the ball off the rim and run. If it gets to a half-court set, that's when I want Shake with the ball. And I think it has to do with what makes Ben special what makes him such a dynamic player is he plays 100 miles an hour at all times. That's just the way he is. It's the way he's wired, and that's just the way he plays. Shake is the opposite. Shake is always under control, calm, poised. He doesn't let anyone rush him or speed him up, and I think that's why it works. I think because and then you just get to the nitty-gritty of their skill sets with Shake's ability to shoot and handle the ball in a pick and roll. And Danny, as we talked about with Ben and his ability to screen and just, he kind of has just a really good feel for that. And
yeah, like two puzzle pieces. So you explained what I was trying to say a lot better, but you're like two puzzle pieces. Yeah.
It's a yin and a yang thing. It really is. They just really fit each other well. And I think that's why it's coming to them so natural without really having played together this year so much. You just see it just seems natural. And that's the scariest part is, Danny, and I wrote about this weekend, is with Ben, this dude, he's just turned 24 years old. It's only going up from here. Like, he's only going to get better. And then when you consider that partnership with Shake, they're only going to get better playing together. It's not going to go the other direction. So it's you don't want to put too much into two scrimmages, but like I said, man, just so far so good. You can't deny what you see so far.
I like what I've seen from Shake, and I like what I've seen from them together, but really Shake, because we saw him when Ben wasn't playing, when Joel wasn't playing. Now he has to incorporate with them, play with them. And we knew defense would get play him tighter. He's still shooting at a high clip. He was 60%. He's 4-9 through these first two scrimmage games. Like, it doesn't seem like much has changed for him. His role has changed, and he's not the primary scorer as he was in February and March when we saw him play, but he just picked everything up and kept going. So I'm very impressed by that. I like what I see out of both of them when they're on the court or when someone goes to the bench to get a breather. There's not much drop off. Everything, whether it's the laughing on the sidelines, the team celebrations, everyone's in sync and it's working right now.
Wilmington University extends its deepest appreciation to the brave individuals who are working tirelessly on the front lines to protect, serve, and care for us during this unprecedented time. Thank you. WilmU stands with you.
Hey, man, we're talking about a lot of good things. There is that elephant in the room with Joel Embiid. Right calf tightness was the issue. I gave props to my boy Paul as much as I could in the group chat, but give him props here because his journalism antenna was up. He said, you know what? I don't know exactly what's wrong with Joel. Could it be something like an injury that surfaced or some type of setback? What are they telling us as it is of now? We had an availability for the Sixers right before they practiced, right before this podcast. What did you hear on the call, Paul?
Well, there wasn't much from the call itself, but yesterday, on Sunday, Brett Brown gave us a lot of info on it. And I'll tell you what, he is really
after
down
the game.
Before and after the game. So we spoke before and after the game, Brett. Before the game, he was asked about it and basically said, like, listen, like, and the team described it as precautionary. They said it was precautionary. And Brett said the same thing, like, listen, like, it's not, we're just trying to be smart. We want to get ahead of it. We don't want it to turn into something bigger than that. So I think that's part of it. I think he's trying to, you know, and then he was asked after the game and gave, someone asked him the concern level of him and Joel about the injury. And he bluntly just said, we have no concerns. That's all. And you know, Brett Brown. Brett Brown will talk. He will give you a long answer. He literally just said, we have no concerns. So if you listen to Brett Brown, you've listened to the Sixers, and normally Brett will be, you know, if there's something bigger, he will at least entertain the question. But he was at a point yesterday where he was like, nah, I'm not even entertaining this because I think he doesn't view it as a big deal. The fact that he's practicing already, it leads me to believe that it's also not a big deal. Listen, this is – I get it. He's got an injury history, and I think that's part of it. But this is a 7-foot, 280-pound-plus dude. Like, it's not that easy to get up and down a basketball court when you're carrying all that. And I get it. I get the concern. You're looking from the other angle of it. The guy has had issues staying healthy his entire career, so I get it. But I also think that's why the Sixers are being overly cautious, because they don't want to take a chance that it goes into something bigger. So if he starts missing regular season games, that's when my concern grows. One scrimmage, I'm not going to go too nuts over that quite yet.
I'm not concerned with the one scrimmage. I won't even be concerned if he misses the next scrimmage. I'm not sold on what Brett Brown and the team have sold us, and maybe that's just from previous years. I want to be hopeful. I want to be optimistic. I want to be level-headed like Paul.
We all want that, but it's
hard.
But from the previous
years, can't lie.
From the previous years, like, it's hard for you to for this to happen, for you to tell me everything's okay, and I got to buy in on that. Like, I've heard it before.
I feel you, bro. I like, feel
it's,
you on that.
No, it's fair. Fair.
It's like going to the mechanic. You'd be like, ah, man, you know something's wrong with the engine. They'd be like, nah, it's fine. It's fine. 2 days later, you're broken down on the side of the road. Now imagine that happening like every other month for 2 years. You go to a different mechanic, you would in real life. You go to a different mechanic, they like, ah, that's nothing to worry about. You're like, yeah, I've heard this before. Can I trust you?
And I'll take it a step further. I'll take it a step further because it almost is just weird, man. You see the type of players and positionless basketball and players coming, you know, down the pike and things like that. It almost gives you a bit of pause to draft a player like Joel Embiid. I mean, these are giant men. You know what I'm saying? I don't think people quite get the understanding of, like, you know, Ben Simmons being 7 feet tall and 6'10", wherever you want to give him. I mean, we're talking about 2 inches. And we know from the preseason, measuring everybody in socks, Ben is a legit whatever size you want to give him. Because in his socks, I think he was 6'10", if I recall. But I'm just saying that to say the fact that, you know, you look at Joel Embiid and a guy of his stature and the, you know, the back issue that kept him out of the NCAA tournament, then the foot that made him drop in the NBA draft, you know, those things are signs in one aspect, and he's overcome those things in another. But at the same time, it just gives you, like, maybe drafting players of that size or, you know, going and, you know, pursuing players like that, it just gives you a little bit of pause just from, you know, Andrew Bynum to, you know, you know, on down the list of players who the Sixers have experienced that have issues with when it comes to injuries, Nerlens Noel, et cetera. Like, I just feel like, you know, all in all, I don't think it's a long-term issue, but is it indicative of a larger issue of how healthy he can be throughout a season? I think it is, because you should lower the expectations and, you know, mitigate the pressure on him to perform or to be in games when he doesn't have to be. And, you know, it's a weird term to say when he doesn't have to be because he's getting paid to play. But I don't know, man. It's just someone's going to figure out the formula of how many games he should be in and how many he shouldn't. And I give a lot of props to that person, whoever that may be, whether it's Brett Brown or Elton Brand or whoever. And I'm just optimistic, but I'm cautious at the same time. So,
yeah, I mean, if you look at the direction the NBA has gone, I mean, how many big men? It's not a direct correlation, but it's kind of like the running back in football. Like, they're not as prioritized as they once were. It's, you know, it's not Hakeem Olajuwon, Patrick Ewing. Like, those aren't the centers anymore. Like, it's like Joel Embiid is kind of in a class of his own right now, right? I mean, who else would you say? I mean,
yeah, he's, you know, he's you got an anomaly,
Jokic,
man. Yeah,
Jokic is in that mix. To me, Anthony Davis is better as a four than a five, so I don't know if I necessarily even put him in that category.
DeMarcus Cousins was for a while, but look at the injuries he's had.
And now he can't stay healthy, right? Yeah. And it tends to always be legs and foot and feet. Like, that seems to be the issue.
Anthony Davis has always nicked up a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not to steal your thunder, but I'm agreeing with you.
Yeah, and I just think when you look around the NBA, like, how many big men would you say are in the top, I don't know, 20 players in the NBA, top 25 guys in the league? Maybe like
two,
four, three, or yeah. I mean, I'd say three or four, maybe.
I was thinking specifically centers, but if you had power forward,
Giannis is 6'8", 9".
Yeah, he's a wing. He's a wing. He's not a big man. A true big man, like a Joel Embiid, true big man.
Yeah.
How many of those guys are in the top 25?
Jokic and Embiid.
Jokic and Embiid. Again, if you want to put Anthony Davis in that mix, but
a player
Gobert,
also Nurkic. But he's also hurt coming back from injury. So
broke
I was
his
almost
leg. Yeah,
reluctant
really bad,
to bring him up. I was almost reluctant to bring his name up.
No, I mean, you look at there's a dearth of centers in the NBA. It's just the reality. Right. True centers who are centerpieces of teams. When you look at like Joel Embiid's post up stats, he by far posts up more than any player in the NBA because there aren't – that's just not a thing anymore. It's guys don't do that anymore. Again, I kind of equate it to the NFL and running backs because teams don't put as much emphasis on running the football anymore, and they have these running back by committees. Like, there's not as many lead backs as there once were. I think it's a similar issue in the NBA. It's just you don't build your team around big men anymore. Now, with that said, I think Joel Embiid is special enough that – yeah, the injuries are rough, but I think he's that special that
it's worth it.
It's worth trying to build around because I just think he's that good. And I think when he is healthy, when he is focused, I don't think it's close that he's the best two-way center in the league, one of the best two-way players in the league in general. So I think he's the kind of guy worth building around, but there's just not that many of them anymore.
It's not many of them. I don't know how many there'll be in the future because, as we've stated on this podcast, and you kind of just went in, like, the whole positionless basketball is taken over and the math is completely changed. It's just – it's not worth it patting it down low. That's why Jahlil Okafor – I don't even know where he is anymore at this point. Is he still in
New Orleans? Yeah, dude, he tore it up in the scrimmage last week. Come on, Ben. Got to catch up.
I'm sorry I'm not tuning in to watch Jahlil Okafor for someone to pound it into him, but him not do anything else
for the rest of the game. He spelt Jahlil Okafor.
He does look good.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, he did it in the fourth quarter. It was against Brooklyn, who has nobody right now. But he looks physically good. Anyway, Ben, totally off the point.
He looks physically good. He's not actually good. Basketball is changing. So, like, you got to be a player on defense that needs to be able to switch. That's why Capella was, for a while, so valuable to Houston. Like, you can't have a big man that can't switch anymore. Joel, Jokic. Gobert, they can switch offensively. You got to be able to do something more than just dunk the basketball. So if you have a pull up, if you can screen, if you can pass like Jokic, like Embiid struggles with the passing part, but like you become more valuable. And there's not a lot of guys like that since this all changed in the last 5 years I don't know how many more of them are actually coming up. So there's going to be a lot of bigs that – not bigs, but guys anywhere between 6'6 and 6'9 that play like Ben or Giannis that people are hoping to be the next dominant player. As far as the big man goes, who knows? I don't have a lot of faith that we'll see a lot of Embiids and Jokic's and whoever coming down the pipeline.
I don't know if that's – only thing that – this is weird – because you got guys like Steven Adams that get $125 million. You know what I mean? So
should he have gotten $125 million?
He probably shouldn't have.
And I like Steven Adams a lot. But
I like Steven Adams. He reminds me of a pirate and Jason Momoa, but he's not worth $125 million.
Listen, leave Aquaman alone, all right? I'm just saying, you looking at Steven Adams, and there's still a premium on rebounding. Is what I'm trying to say. So guys that can come in, Andre Drummond, and get 15 rebounds a game and things like that, they have a significant value. Now, how many positions they can play and how versatile they are, how low they can get in their defensive stance, all those things are relative. But you got guys like Bol Bol. Like, that is the future, man. This dude, I mean, obviously having a father who played the NBA and the genes of Manute Bol help a whole lot. But at the same time, it's just like, I don't know. I just feel like Joel Embiid is he may be a once in a lifetime type of athlete, and that might not be overstating it because of all the things that Paul mentioned about his versatility and, you know, how he fits in the system and how a player of his caliber isn't likely to be a top 20 player in the NBA. But I think all in all, I think it just comes with the territory. Just you have to deal with it. The injuries and the speculation and the game time decisions and the, you know, low management is all come with it. I mean, is there any other way to look at it?
No, it's the reality of a guy being that big. It just is. And, you know, he's taking measures to try to, you know, get himself in shape. I believe that he did. Like, you know what I mean? Like, why would they, like, they have no incentive to lie about something like that, because it would just be – you would find out within a game or two that he wasn't really in good shape.
Right. And so, I saw him at the practice facility sweating away and all that stuff.
Yeah, like, I do think the guy has taken it more seriously over the last year or so as far as, like, wanting to be in shape and all that. But it's just the reality of a human being that large and asking them to do the things that the Sixers asked Joel Embiid to do. And, Ben, I got to disagree with you a little bit in the sense that, yeah, switchability is big, and that is – where the league is trending, but rim protection is still huge. And I think that's where Houston is going to – that's going to be their fault when they don't get to where they want to go in the Western Conference. You still need a guy that can protect the rim, that can mitigate some of the issues you might have in the perimeter. Because, like, look with the Sixers. Why do you think Ben Simmons, Matisse Thybulle, and those guys can take the chances they take? Because if you get by them, you have to deal with Joel Embiid at the rim. So, I mean, it does make a huge difference to have an elite rim protector in the game. And I think, again, that's where Anthony Davis is so valuable, is just as a weak side rim protector, he is outstanding in that regard. So, and Capella, I think going forward, that's his biggest strength. He's a screener, roller, and he protects the rim. And I think it's either got to be a unicorn center who could do a little bit of everything, or it's got to be a guy like a Capella who can screen, who can roll, and then who can get on the other end and block shots, a rim-running center. I think those are your only two options at center nowadays. You can't just have a plodding, to your point, a Jahlil Okafor kind of guy who is a throwback big who would have been a star in the 90s but is now a deep bench player for the Pelicans. Like, those guys are dinosaurs now. Now it's about either really skilled guys or rim runners. You can't have any.
Why did the Sixers draft them? Why?
Sorry if I made it sound like rim protection is important. It's very important. I just think going forward, like, it's going to be an emphasis on bigs knowing how to switch and slide. Being able to protect the rim will always be important, will always be key. I think going forward in the future, like, it's going to be an emphasis on bigs knowing how to slide. That's all I was saying. If you can protect the rim, I think you'll always have a job, at least for like 6 years, give or take, in the league. But, all right, so now to the Okafor thing. I don't know why the Sixers drafted him. I don't know why anybody would have drafted him. I remember looking at the advanced analytic numbers, and it was, this guy is offensively gifted, but unless you're going to just pound the ball into him every time down court, you're not going to go very far. And that's pretty much what it is.
the guy did win a national championship and was really good in 1 year at Duke. I mean, I got to put that. I mean, don't get me wrong. I didn't love the paper when they made it either. But yeah. But the guy was a prospect. I mean, that's. I think sometimes it's so easy to look at it in hindsight, and that's the way we look at the Fultz pick now too. Because I can admit that I loved Markelle Fultz coming back. I thought he was going to be a star. Like, I really did. I had no doubt this kid was going to be a star. I didn't feel necessarily that way about Okafor, but I think there were people who did feel that way. And I think most people looked at it as, yeah, he's a top five pick. I think people would have been shocked if he wasn't. There was a time where people thought he was going to be the number one overall pick, if you remember back to that time. So it's all hindsight. It would have worked out wonderfully if they had gotten Porzingis. But then again, maybe you don't get Ben Simmons if you get Porzingis. So it's like chain reaction type thing.
You know, we all have our – if you look back 2020 vision on some things, I thought Andrew Wiggins and Jabari Parker were going to be the next level. I thought they were going to be the future of the NBA.
As did I.
Woo, child. If Jabari could stay healthy, he will at least be a contributing player.
Andrew Wiggins, every time I watch him play, it's just someone stealing money left and right. He got that big max contract. He promised he would be better on defense, and he hasn't. He's been a wreck. He's been a bust and a disappointment. There's nothing else to say about it.
Bro, there were a ton of people here in Philly rigging for Wiggins, so don't ever think that people weren't interested in him. You weren't the only one. You know what I think really sums the whole thing up, man, is just – look how far the league has come so fast. And I think the person who is indicative of that the most is Dwight Howard, of how dominant and this overbearing he was with the Orlando Magic. And through the arc of his career, you might see him spotting up for three in like garbage time for the Lakers. The need for players who – have no even like he's not a shooter. He has no roots of shooting. Like, he's not going to shoot from the outside, but the fact that he is a player that has felt forced to fade out to the 3-point shot. Norvell Pelle, come on, man. At what point?
I'll give you the perfect example, Danny. The perfect example. Brook Lopez. Look how right. Brook Lopez.
Thank you. Look at this. How fast from him and his brother at Stanford to him being an efficient 3-point shooter. Look how fast and far the league has come.
He was looked at as a star-like post player. And then as the league shifted, he learned how to shoot threes.
He was good in the post.
He's a very good post player, very good post scorer. And then now he's even – so last year he added a three. This year he's like reinvented himself as like a defensive stalwart. Like, if you look at his defensive metrics, he's been outstanding this year. So, like, you got to evolve. And I think that's what the best of them do. And I think that's what Brook Lopez is a perfect example of how, if you're a big man in the NBA, the evolution of how that's looked and how different his game has looked over the years. Like, he's a completely different player than he was 10 years
ago. Great example.
NBC Universal has something new for you. Peacock, the new streaming service that has all the best TV shows, including 30 Rock, Law & Order SVU, as well as Parks and Rec. Plus, great movies, including one of my favorites, Forgetting Sarah Marshall. Peacock is the exclusive home for all of NBC Sports' free Premier League coverage, In Deep with Ryan Lochner, and Lost Speedways, hosted by Dale Earnhardt Jr. Learn more at peacocktv.com.
With all that, the Sixers here, in the midst of all the talent that they're enjoying, and Ben Simmons and his dynamic aspects that he brings to the game. Is there a player on the Sixers who you think is unheralded, or I know a guy who's on the tip of your lips, Paul, Glenn Robinson, suddenly coming into the fold and making a difference and hitting shots that we long to have players who could come off the bench and hit shots like that. So does he fit that mold of a guy you think isn't getting enough recognition?
Maybe a little bit. I think he's a guy who, right before our eyes, is earning a spot in the rotation without question. I mean, and Brett has said he looked really good in the practices. He's had a really good camp so far. And he's looked good in the two scrimmages. And there was one – at one point in the game, I can't remember who else was in the lineup, but it was Ben, it was Matisse, and it was Glenn Robinson. And I really liked it. The three of them just had this dynamic, like – being able to switch everything and like being active. And that's the biggest thing I've noticed about Glenn Robinson III is how active he's been. He has been everywhere. He's getting the loose balls. He's, you know, running the floor, you know, giving Ben Simmons an outlet to go to move in transition. He's hitting shots, which is huge. It was a shame to see him go down on Sunday because he was looking really good. It's looking like he's earning a spot. And, you know, Furkan Korkmaz, you know.
Was it just a hip struggled. Pointer for Glenn before we move on?
It was hip pointer. Yep, hip okay. pointer. But you look at Furkan Korkmaz, he really struggled. And we've talked about this before. He was one of seven from the field. If Furkan Korkmaz isn't hitting shots, what is he doing for you? And I'm still worried about that. And you look at when Oklahoma City's got a lot of athletes. They have a lot of guys who could just jump out of the gym and really run. And Korkmaz really struggled with that. And when you look at Glenn Robinson III, this is a dude who won a dunk contest. Like, he can run up and down the floor with anybody. So that's why, to me, I lean a little bit towards liking Glenn Robinson III over Korkmaz, especially, you know, I think there's going to come a point where Korkmaz is going to have a couple of those games where he's just on fire, and it's going to help you win games. But when that's not the case, how valuable is it to have a Glenn Robinson III who can just be steady and reliable and do all the little things you need?
Yeah, when I pitched this topic to you guys, I thought of it yesterday, and I pitched it to you guys today. And, man, I don't think there's anybody, another option besides Glenn Robinson III. Furkan is playing himself out of a position when the game starts back up. So, and with – we talked about it last
time. Do you really think so? I don't think he's been that bad.
He was decent in the – he was good in the first game, actually. The second game,
Brett, though, I think – Brett has already pushed all his chips into the middle of the table with him, man.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's Furkan. That's Paul just said, if he's not shooting, what else can he do? Like, what else is he bringing onto the table? And if we can't count on him to make shots, like, I think everyone – I don't know where he was in the lineup or on the bench, whether he was 7th, 8th, 9th. But I feel like people are just jumping up. Burks, Matisse.
First quarter Furkan, baby. Like, you know who it is.
I mean, he's 4-15 and 2-9. Like, I don't want to see him fail. Like, we've had this conversation on the pod and in our group chat and at work when we were in the office. Like, we all ate Furkan at times. We were hot and cold on him.
But he's a streaky shooter. I just think it's what you're going to get.
He's a streaky shooter. And, like, it was that argument whether, like, can he play his numbers on the road compared to his numbers at home? Yeah. And, yes, everyone's on the road right now being in Orlando. But, like, if he's not making shots, and so far he's not making shots, I know they're just scrimmages, how long do you leave him out there to turn it around?
No, that's a great point. I think it's just where he fits in the rotation. I think he has a spot, but what time he's coming off the bench, what situations, I think is really what's up to the coach to figure out.
Well, and it's got matchups.
He's dropping from 7th to 8th to further and further. Like, because just can't – he's a wing. He's not going to be able to guard anyone. He's not hitting shots, as I stated.
Only 9 guys are playing in the playoffs, and Al Horford has one of those spots. So it's really just 7, 8, 9 is what we're trying to figure out.
Well, it's probably a handful of games that – I mean, we all have to admit it. Furkan Korkmaz has bailed them out and won them games, like multiple games this season. Because when he gets hot, it's just he's unconscious and he can't miss. And you're going to need – like I said, there's going to be a game or two where that's going to happen. And it's tough because with a guy like that, you have to take your lumps with it a little bit. But if there is a game, Ben, to your point, if there's a game where he starts off 0-5 and he looks like he doesn't have it and the defense and he's getting killed defensively, you have options. So I think that's what's big when you have a Glenn Robinson III that if Furkan struggles, if Matisse struggles with fouls or being a little too overzealous defensively, you have a guy like him that you can fall back on and rely on. So, I mean, I think that's why, to me, Glenn Robinson III is unheralded. Like, he might be your 8th, 9th, 10th guy. And that compared to last year, like, that's ridiculous to have a guy like that as now your 8th, 9th, 10th guy to be just a steady player who, you know, again, will do all the little things, will hustle. And if he can hit shots, that's a huge plus.
Well, gentlemen, we've now reached the portion of the podcast where, for some reason, everything ties back to Philly as we have former Philadelphia 76ers draft pick Allen Iverson's rookie Lou Williams leaving the bubble to attend to some matters And while he was gone, he decided, why don't I pick up lunch at a popular gentleman's club in the Atlanta area? So he goes into Magic City, according to him, just to pick up some wings. But that is, for all intents and purposes, outside of the guidelines of what he's allowed to do, because the NBA has explicitly stated that players shouldn't be convening in bars and things like that. Are you buying the Lou Williams, you know, just being a part of the Atlanta culture? He is from the Georgia area, just saying, you know, this is what we do around here. We get great food. It just happened to be a gentleman's club. Or are you thinking he was out there doing something a little more hands-on?
Well, Danny, I've actually never been to a gentleman's club in my life, so I don't know what it's really like or what
it's for gentlemen,
there.
Paul. It is for gentlemen.
Okay. Anyway.
Can't keep a straight face.
No, off the rails. But I don't know what to say other than, what? Come on, Lou.
Like, I mean, Lou is
you had to
joke.
Know. He's, like, he's like, know this is not a good idea.
Yeah, he's like,
you
know, to me. But he gets a 10-day quarantine.
Yo, you're going to tell me Lou Williams doesn't have a friend, a family. Like, if that was his true intention, like, he really just wanted wings from that establishment, he couldn't have someone go there for him so that he wasn't seen? Like, Lou, come on, man. Like, you have to be able to know that.
We just went through this with Rashawn Holmes. A little different. He left the bubble.
It's a lot different.
What I'm saying,
wings said, are the common denominator.
Wait. No, listen. Listen, he, like, you said that, Lou, does he have anyone that could have went and picked up the food? Rashawn Holmes could have had someone and picked up, had someone go and pick up the food. That's what I'm saying.
That's a little different. So in Rashawn's case, he's going to he's still in the bubble, or what he perceives that he is still in the bubble. Lou Williams is out of the bubble for an excused absence to take care of whatever he had to take care of in Georgia, and he went to a strip club. That is not the same as wandering. Rashawn's thing was more, I think, ignorance and this much stupidity. Lou Williams, it's no ignorance. He knew exactly what the hell he was doing, and it's just really dumb. Why would you do that?
Oh, no, I completely hear you on that. I think they were both dumb. I think it was completely dumb. I don't think either one was malicious. I think we just give Rashawn Holmes a little bit more benefit of doubt. Now, the Lou Williams, for him to say, hey, he was hungry and that's where he went. I think about, you guys remember Pac-Man Jones in the NFL? You guys remember he had a meeting with Roger Goodell in New York at 10 a.m. and at 3 a.m. he was at a strip club and some fight broke out in New York. And he didn't bring it up to Roger Goodell when they met up that morning. And it came out later, and his defense was, I was hungry, so I went there to get something to eat. The McDonald's across the street wasn't open. The IHOP wasn't open. You went there to get something to eat? It's like that Chris Rock bit. That body part and tater tots don't mix. Like, you can't be that hungry. Like, there's no way you can be that hungry.
I'm smiling, laughing, because I'm thinking of, as you guys know, Parks and Rec is like one of my favorite shows ever. And there's just this one episode where they go to a strip club to cheer Aziz Ansari's character up. And then the guy Ron Swanson, who is played by Nick Offerman, brilliant in that show. And they go to a strip club, and the guy Ron Swanson's like, nah, I'm not a fan of strip clubs, but I am a fan of breakfast food. And they have like a breakfast buffet. So like, oh, you see everyone, God, all these guys going all crazy over the strippers. He's over there like flipping pancakes and like having fun. And like, but that's what I'm thinking of the whole time, is like, yeah, I'm not here for this. I'm here because I want to eat some wings. Okay.
Hey, man. It just reeks of lameness all the way around, because he has a 10-day quarantine. Somehow he avoided a fine, which I don't know how he quite managed to finagle that. But I feel like he was trying to avoid playing in the seeding games. So he was like, hey, this is going to get me a 14-day quarantine, so I'll be tucked away while everybody else is out there sweating on the court. I have no idea how you make that type of just oblivious decision. I mean, we're here in the tri-state area, Delaware Valley, and, you know, the restrictions here are different and than they are in the Georgia area, Atlanta area. So maybe because the environment has been more free, he felt like it wasn't that big a deal, or he had a temporary lapse in judgment or whatever.
How did they decide on 10 days? That seems like such an arbitrary number. Like,
well, that's the number. So it's excused absence.
I thought it was four.
That's for an excused absence. So if it's an excused absence, it's four. If it's a, like Rashawn, if you do something and they catch you, it's 10. And Dana, I think to your point, I think the reason why there's no fine or no extra punishment is none of us know why Lou went home. And maybe he really did have an urgent family matter to deal with. But while he was out,
he had a hankering for some wings.
Yes.
Some but my Magic point is, City we wings.
Sure. But what we don't know is why he had to go there in the first place. And maybe what led him to that was an urgent family matter. So that's why the NBA can't come down on him too hard. But him doing that, I think the 10 days is viewed as a punishment. Whereas if he didn't get caught with all that, he's only having to do it for 4 days.
What's the feeling in the rest of the locker room? Like, his teammates are like, yo, you owe us an explanation.
I'd be laughing at him. I got to be honest. Look, if it were me.
I think there are some laughing at him. I think it's others that might be like, yo, like, what did you having to go to this Magic City have to do with you going home to attend to a family matter? I think a legit conversation might pop up in that locker room. Because, like, if it's us playing and one of you guys asked me, like, I don't have to tell you, but how does that fix the team chemistry and all that? Like, what does that do to team chemistry? I think some tough conversation might be had.
He is a long in the tooth veteran. So I don't see many guys on that team being able to challenge him when it comes to his decision making as far as, like, hey, you owe us an explanation. The jokes are just going to fly endlessly. That's going to happen until probably.
Kawhi Leonard seemed like someone to joke around.
I was just going to say, you know,
he's
what?
A fun Kawhi, guy.
But listen, Kawhi doesn't speak up. Like, he's a quiet. He's quiet. But that, to me, that means if he does have a problem with it, and Ben, to your point, he might, because he's a serious dude and he wants to win. He went to L.A. because he wanted, you know, because he wanted to be on the West Coast. But he also wanted to win. That's why he recruited Paul George there. So he might not take too kindly to Williams doing that. And if it bothers him enough to the point where he feels like he's got to speak up, those words are going to carry weight because he doesn't speak up that often. So I do wonder if a guy like Kawhi would have an issue with that and would want to address that.
I mean, all in all, I think he's just missing two games in the 10-day quarantine, so I don't think it's going to be as egregious an error as it could have been.
And what do they really have to play for in the seeding games? Like, they're pretty much – they're going to be either the 2 or the 3 seed. Like, I don't know if that's going to make a huge difference, so.
And maybe this is something that gives them something, a shot in the arm to make it more lighthearted when maybe it hadn't been before. Or I just think overall it won't play as big a factor as people making it out to be. And it's just weird, you know, we relate that to the Sixers because he used to play for them. Philly is kind of the epicenter of the sports COVID world at the moment because of what happened with the Marlins and the Phillies. And that thing, even that experience kind of harkened me back to March 11th when the Pistons and the Sixers were playing. And then there was the Rudy Gobert instance where the Pistons had played the Utah Jazz. And now the Sixers and Paul and people who were down there are exposed to people who possibly have been exposed to the virus. So I don't know, man. There's definitely a lighthearted aspect to it. And at the same breath, there's also like a little bit of dread of like, well, what's next or what happens from here? So it's easy to look at, you know, situations like that with the Lou Williams things and take it one way. But I think there is a seriousness to it in all for all intents and purposes, because I look at, you know, just the fact that people are dying and the U.S. has become the epicenter for it. And everything that the precautions that people are taking to protect people, and then someone like Lou is so flipped to, you know, go somewhere and just go to Magic City and pick up wings and then try to go back in the bubble. Props to the NBA for getting it right, for having the bubble, for figuring out a way to finish the season and keep it safe for the players and, you know, hopefully their families who do visit the teams that get to the second round as well. So there is a seriousness to it, and I do appreciate the fact that the NBA has had so much success, WNBA as well, of putting players in an environment where they can, you know, still get paid and finish the season and crown a champion, where other sports aren't quite having as much success, particularly Major League Baseball. The NFL is kind of a wait-and-see approach, but I think it is a double-edged sword for all intents and purposes.
And, you know, you don't want to get too negative about it, but, I mean, we talked about it before the pod, Danny. We have to be realistic. You had a plane full of baseball players and staff coming from a COVID hotspot in Florida, traveling on a plane together up to Philadelphia and spending 3 days together in close proximity. Like, how did we not think that there was a very, very real possibility that this could happen? And now we're at a point where games are getting postponed and delayed, and we really don't know what's going to happen with the rest of the baseball season. It's scary to think about right now. And there is, Danny, a little bit. I do kind of think back to that day on March 11th and the surrealness of all that and everything that we encountered that day and how weird it is. But, I think there are people who, to your point, Danny, are taking it seriously and people who aren't. And it was disappointing from Lou Williams, like you said, to be kind of so flip about it and not realize the gravity of the situation. And then I got to give props to a guy like Kyrie Irving, who, you know, people want to make fun of him and all that. And there were a lot of people weren't thrilled when he was speaking up, when the NBA was having discussions about coming back. But you know what? The dude just put his money where his mouth is, donated, I think, $1.5 million to WNBA players, who we all know about the wage scale differential there, and to the players who aren't playing. And we saw, like, the Elena Deladon thing, which she went through with the WNBA and them really pressuring her into trying to play when she has Lyme disease and all that. Like, I really appreciate people who are, like, we all want to see sports back and we all want to watch sports. It's been, like, for me, my mental health to watch two basketball games and to cover them and to interview Brett Brown and players and all that. It's done wonders for me mentally. I can't lie about that. But at the same time, I respect that this is bigger than all of us, and it's way bigger than sports. And I think everyone's got to take it like that. And I can't believe that we're sitting here 4 months later and still having discussions where some people aren't taking it that seriously. So disappointment is the biggest thing for me, but I am glad that there are people stepping up.
Yeah, to piggyback what Paul just said, yo, shout out to Kyrie. Like, I've made fun of him plenty of times, whether it's wanting to be the union president or saying the earth is flat, whatever. Like, he sat out. I thought he was going to sit out in obscurity with this protest. But, no, he put his money where his mouth is. He's helping out WNBA players. David Price, who sat out, he's called out the Marlins and questioned MLB for how they handled this entire thing. I think way too many people are greedy and just want their money, and they're not thinking about everyone, like how this affects everyone. If you know you have COVID-19 and you play a game or come in contact with people and don't let them know, I don't know if there's like any legal ramifications from that. I wouldn't be shocked if, like, when all this is done and over, someone tried to run up on a couple of those Marlins players. I think that's ridiculously irresponsible. These are grown adults. This isn't high school. This isn't college. These are grown adults that didn't let their coworkers, know that they had tested positive.
And Kyrie carrying the torch of Kobe, of LeBron, NBA players who have embraced the WNBA with open arms, making sure that players who are missing the season for any reason can apply for that $1.5 million. And supplement their salary, a league where the highest salary hovers around $200,000. And you look at how much, you know, Tobias Harris just signed a $180 million deal. So, I mean, that's all you need to know. But big props to Kyrie. Hate to end the pod on a somber note like that, but, I mean, just have to deal with the reality of the situation. We haven't really run from any topics, whether it had been social justice issues or had been talking about COVID-19 and how, whether or not, you know, Paul, you know, has put it so eloquently in past podcasts, just not effective whether we can make these sports seasons happen or whether or not we should. So here we are caught in that dichotomy again of can and should. And, you know, players who don't take it as serious, it's upsetting to see that. And, you know, the jokes are coming on one end, but at the same time, there are people's lives who are being lost all the while. So while we continue to deal with the Sixers as they prepare for their season opener, what do we call this? The restart to the season? Seeding games? The opener of their seeding games coming up?
I have no idea what you call it.
The restart of the season.
The restart of the season is coming up.
The official restart.
The official restart coming up here for the 76ers. As they try to worth mentioning, Domantas Sabonis injured for the Indiana Pacers, which would cost possibly an injury that could keep him out for a long period of time. So that affects the Sixers when it comes to the seeding and which team they should play, because so many of us have said the matchup with the Celtics would be great, and they didn't have a great season series against the Pacers. But suddenly them losing such a versatile player like Sabonis makes that Pacers matchup maybe even more amicable, but just something worth keeping an eye on here in the pod. Paul, your thoughts on that, what's happening on the website and how things are shaking out?
Well, to me, that I would be stunned if it's not Sixers Heat in the first round. I think they seem like they're on a collision course, because I don't think the Heat are catching the Celtics, and I can't imagine the Pacers being able to keep up with the Sixers without Sabonis. I think Oladipo still hasn't even 100% decided whether or not he's going to play. He's played in a couple scrimmages, but I don't think he's 100% on board yet. So I don't know. I see the Heat and the Sixers on a collision course to play each other in their first round.
I'm not ready for that drama, man.
It's going to be fun. And then just like, you know, on the website, we're continuing to monitor, you know, Joel Embiid's health as well as the health, you know, Glenn Robinson III and moving forward. As I mentioned, Noah Levick had a really interesting article today talking about that, the contrast between Ben Simmons and Shake Milton, and how that, you know, how the Sixers are trying to harness that, and how it could turn out to be something special if it's harnessed properly.
Hey, I did think it's worth mentioning, for more on the Phillies, the Marlins, the MLB season as it pertains to this COVID-19 outbreak, be sure to check out Phillies Talk Podcast, Corey Seidman, Jim Salisbury, and all of their guests. That's it for us. Thanks for listening. We appreciate you joining us as always. We will not take this thing for granted. We are grateful and thankful for everything that this NBA season is bringing us at this point, because, you know, even with the misery of the Phillies losing 2 of 3 to an injury depleted, COVID-19 depleted Florida Marlins team, the fact that the misery of losing and the toughness of dealing with your team not performing like you expect. I'm thankful to have it back is all I'm trying to say. I don't care. We didn't have it, and I'm just glad, you know, as safe as can be, these teams are back playing again. But, right, guys? Feel the same way, right?
Yeah. It was nice to yell at an athlete on a TV screen.
And that was Vince Velasquez. Is that who you were yelling at?
No, I was watching the scrimmage. I won't reveal which. I was yelling at a member of the Philadelphia Phillies, so yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, for the mustacheless wonder, Ben Barry, our esteemed co-host and producer, for Paul Hudrick, the bearded wonder. That thing is getting thick around the neck there, bro. My God, the level-headed one, Paul Hudrick. I'm Danny Pomelos. Man, thank you, everyone. We appreciate you. We will see you again soon. This has been Sixers Talk, coming your way once on Friday. Check us out then. I'm Danny Pomelos. Thanks for watching and listening. We'll see you next time.
One, two, three, four. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.